I'm Karen Hartglass. It's time for It's All About Food. How are you today? Good. That sounded like a good. I'm good. Thanks for asking. You know, we have this conversation where I talk and I hear you somehow. I hear you. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. This show, we talk about food. We do it every week. And we learn all kinds of wonderful things from the experts and authors and food people that join me on this program. And something that's really important is that we tune in love. Love is the only answer, everybody. If ever you're in a challenge and you don't know what to do, take a deep breath and think about love. You will find a healing answer. So I'm taking a deep breath right now. Okay, speaking about love, my next guest has been using love for about two decades now with her very passionate project. Ellie Lax is the founder of The Gentle Barn. She is responsible for the daily care of the animals and programs at The Gentle Barn and has been since The Gentle Barn's inception in 1999. And if you can do the math, that's 20 years. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, the 20th anniversary of The Gentle Barn with founder Ellie Lax. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm very happy to have you. I've had you on the program twice before, and I love talking with you and hearing about the amazing work that you're doing. So I'm happy to have this opportunity again. And before we hear about The Gentle Barn, I just like to say we talk a lot about food on this program. We talk about the health aspects of food, the environmental aspects of food, but the foundation for me for doing all of my work is for the animals. I got into this world because I didn't want to contribute to the pain and suffering and exploitation. That's my foundation, everybody. And we talk about lots of different reasons why we don't want to eat animals, but the main reason for me is because of who they are. And Ellie, you're doing great work with saving some of those precious individuals at your three locations now. So let's hear more about The Gentle Barn.
Thank you. And by the way, I couldn't agree with you more about reasons. Yeah, we have three locations. We're located in Los Angeles, California, Nashville, Tennessee, and St. Louis, Missouri. But we started in Los Angeles. We've been around for 20 years, like you said. And basically, we rescue animals that have nowhere else to go because they're too old, too sick, too lame, or too scared to be adoptable by anyone else. Mm-hmm. We rescue horses, cows, pigs, sheep, goats, chickens, turkeys, peacocks, llamas, dogs, cats, donkeys, and parrots. And we bring them in, we rehabilitate them with vet care, but we use acupuncture, acupressure, chiropractics, deep tissue massage therapy, ultrasound, ice therapy, water therapy, energetic healing, nutritional supplements, and lots of love. And once they're finally happy and healthy, and if we can find them a home of their own, great. And if not because they need ongoing care for the rest of their lives, then we give them sanctuary with us forever.
Well, that's beautiful. Tell me, how long have the sanctuaries been around in Tennessee and Missouri?
So Tennessee started 4 years ago. It started with a birthday wish, actually. I don't know where this came from, but I told my husband that for my birthday, all I wanted to do was rescue a cow. And a few days later, somebody called and said there was this cow in Tennessee that had lost a foot and he couldn't walk. Mm. And she had made over 200 phone calls and no one else could help. So my husband researched for a bovine surgeon and a company to make a prosthetic foot and then said, happy birthday, we're going to Tennessee. So we ended up going to Tennessee. The cow, Dudley, had several amputations and surgeries and healing methods like water therapy, acupuncture, and electric muscle therapy. And then he was fitted with his prosthetic. And then once he was used to wearing it, he was discharged. And by then we opened a gentle barn for him. 4 years ago.
Wow, that's so beautiful. What a great gift. I mean, you're giving the gift, but getting a gift, and it's beautiful all around.
And St. Louis started almost 2 years ago, where there were six cows that escaped a slaughterhouse, and they were running through the streets, and it made national news. At the end of the day, the authorities finally rounded them up and sent them back to the slaughterhouse, but by this time, people were calling the slaughterhouse saying, you have to let them live. And so the slaughterhouse agreed to let a sanctuary come and get them, and the community had raised a GoFundMe for their freedom money, but no sanctuary stepped forward. And so day after day, no sanctuaries were willing to take them. And so finally, 4 days later, the man of the slaughterhouse said, this is ridiculous, I'm going to slaughter them in the morning. At which point, our phone started ringing. My husband jumped on a red eye, got there in time to stop their slaughter, pulled them to the hospital to fix their injuries and infections, and then found a foster home while we found a property, raised our own GoFundMe campaign, bought the property, and started the third gentle barn almost 2 years ago.
Wow. So your original gentle barn is 20 years old, and I can't imagine the responsibilities that have been involved, first from birthing the gentle barn. But unlike children that people raise, the work, the nurturing never becomes independent, where children go off and they're on their own. This is like a forever ongoing project. And, you know, I wonder how that is for you in terms of energy and workload and motivation, and how do you do it?
Well, you know, they say when you're living your dream, you don't work a day in your life. And it's really true. I mean, me and my husband, we run the gentle barn together, and we do put in 14 to 16 hour days, 7 days a week, where there's extensive travel because we're going to our other locations as well as doing other rescues in other states. So there's lots of travel, lots of managing staff and volunteers, lots of animals that we're overseeing because we have 200 animals. Most of them are old, so they need lots of care to keep them mobile and comfortable. So it definitely is very, very time consuming, but I love it. I mean, I'm living my dream every single day. It's all I ever wanted since I was a kid. So I'm just so grateful to be able to live this life.
When you were talking about the animals that you have and the treatments that you give them, it sounds very much like treatments that humans will get, the wide range of things that we can have. And I'm connecting the dots here because I'm continually reading stories about how many people are struggling with their own emotional challenges, abuse on a variety of different levels. Humans treat each other horribly in many cases, and we need so many different kinds of treatments to attempt to heal us. But there is something else that helps us heal, and you do it at your sanctuaries with the animals and with children. And the animals can teach us something, especially, I imagine, if they've been abused and then experienced some amount of love, they are there to unconditionally give back to us. Can you talk about what you're doing with children
and at-risk youth? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, animals have so much to teach us. So there was struggles going on in my own childhood. I had some abuse going on and some loneliness. And it was always animals that saved me. As a matter of fact, I tried to kill myself when I was 7 years old, and it was a hummingbird that saved my life. So I grew up with a very firm belief that animals are angels among us, that they're here to connect us to back to who we really are. They're here to remind us of our worth, and they're here to connect us to the love inside ourselves. And animals have always saved me, inspired me, and given me hope to keep going. So that's what we do at the gentle barn. At the gentle barn, we take in animals that have nowhere else to go. We heal them and give them sanctuary. And then when they're ready, we partner with them to heal people with the same stories of abuse and neglect. So we work with foster agencies, inner city schools, drug and alcohol rehab centers, war veteran centers, senior centers, special needs classes. And basically what we do is domestic violence shelters. What we do is we ask the agencies to identify their part of the population that is not responding to traditional therapy. The people that won't talk, that will not be open or vulnerable, and that don't want to relive their experiences. And we ask those agencies to bring those clients to us. And then instead of trying to get them to talk in a traditional therapy setting, Instead, we do the talking and we tell them animal stories. But when we're telling the animal stories, we're really telling their story. And so all of a sudden, in hearing a story that is their own, they know that they're not the only one. They know that there's someone else out there that has suffered their pain. In seeing the animal play and live a wonderful, idyllic life, they know that they can get there too. They get to practice gentleness when they're holding the animals. They get to practice leadership and confidence by holding larger animals. They get to put their hands in Mother Earth and connect with nature through planting gardens. We take resilient walks where we explore nature and talk about the resilience of nature, all in an effort to cultivate self-awareness and hope for the future in these lost people. And they really end up finding themselves in the barnyard.
I love it. I love that story. There seems to be a ring on my end, and I have no idea where it's coming from. So I'm sorry. I've never heard the sound before, and it just keeps coming going. I hope it goes.
Yeah.
All right. We need more of you, and I'm glad to hear that there's three sanctuaries because so many people need healing. Clearly, there are some that have extreme special needs, but I think we can learn so much from animals. And we do so many terrible things. What else is going on at the sanctuary that you want to tell us about?
Well, one of the things that I'm particularly excited about is in April coming up, we have one of our pigs' birthday. He is 12 years old. So what we deal with a lot at sanctuaries is the fact that farm animals are genetically engineered to get very big very fast. So they can go to slaughter when they're babies. And so what we end up with when we rescue animals is 3,000-pound cows and 1,000-pound pigs and obese turkeys that by the time they're two, they can't walk anymore. And so we deal with all these very enormous animals, and our task is to keep them mobile and comfortable for as long as possible. Now, we go to our veterinarians and ask them for help, but veterinarians are not really versed in caring for elderly farm animals because farm animals aren't allowed to live typically till old age. So instead of our veterinarians helping us, we're actually out on the cutting edge developing methods for caring for senior farm animals and giving the data to the veterinarians. So we do. We have cows that get acupuncture. We have turkeys that get acupuncture. We have pigs that get acupuncture, massage therapy. We use CBD oil. There's a whole gamut of things that go into keeping them mobile and comfortable for longer. So when I started the Gentle Barn, farm pigs that were 1,000 pounds or more because of the genetic engineering had a lifespan about 4 or 5 years, because by the time they're full grown, mobility issues start kicking in. It becomes harder and harder for them to walk. And then once they can no longer walk, their organs start shutting down and, you know, you're at the end of the road. So over the last 20 years, we've been playing with how do we get farm pigs to live longer. So, yes, we've brought acupuncture, massage therapy, CBD, and all kinds of things to the table. We also use organic fruits and vegetables to feed them. We keep them on a very low-calorie diet other than that. We give them lots and lots of exercise every single day, and we keep them on really fluffy beds of straw so that they're not laying on the hard ground. And the combination of all of that has enabled us to celebrate our pig Zeus's 12th birthday. And we have never had a pig that lived that long in the history of the Gentle Barn, and we're ecstatic.
Happy birthday. That's beautiful.
So we're going to have a giant birthday party for him, and we're really, really excited.
And when is that going to be?
That is going to be April 21st on Sunday from 10 to 2.
The day before Earth Day and the day before my birthday.
Nice.
I won't forget that. I wish I could be in town for that, but I live in New York.
No, I wish you'd come to his party.
Yeah, at some point I'm going to get there. I visit Northern California frequently, and every time I'm there, I think I got to take a spin down south because there's so much to do, but I haven't done that in a long time. But when I do, Gentle Barn will be on my list.
Nice.
Now, the big sanctuary is in California, and I'm wondering, in the last few years since we've had some dramatic weather changes, lots of droughts and lots of rain, has that affected the sanctuary?
Yes, it really has. Absolutely. We've had to make a bigger effort, especially in our Tennessee and Missouri location, to figure out ways of how to keep everybody warm, how to melt the ice. Just this last winter, the doors to our barn were frozen shut. And we had to figure out a way how to melt the ice to open the barn doors, how to keep everybody outside in conditions that are dry and not muddy, how to keep everybody warm with heaters and blankets and jackets. I think that we've done a really good job. Everybody has been very comfortable this winter, but it is kind of an ongoing job. Also in Tennessee, we've had extreme flooding. It literally will not stop raining over there. And so we've had flooding issues that we've had to deal with. So, you know, just kind of adapting the barns and helping the animals adapt to colder climates has definitely been a chore on the in the farm, but we've done it.
You keep succeeding.
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you meet each challenge and succeed?
Well, my motto is just never take no for an answer. I don't believe in no. I don't believe in I can't. I just know that there's an answer, and I know that I'm going to find it. So
as everybody is inspired as I am, that's why I love talking to you. There's so much bad news out there, and you know we need to focus on the good and not say no. We need to say yes and do whatever it is we're dreaming about because we can do it, and it matters.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that when we're really inspired to do something, to love something, to yearn for something, it's because we're supposed to have it. So I just don't believe in no. I just think that there are answers out there. There's infinite possibilities, and you just have to connect to them and find them. And if you believe you're going to find the answer, then you do find the answer. I remember years ago, we had a veal calf. So that's a calf that was taken away from her mom at birth from the dairy industry so her breast milk could be stolen for people to drink. And then she was stomped on her spine so that she couldn't walk. And she laid there for 8 weeks, and then they were going to send her for slaughter for veal. And we were given the amazing opportunity to save her. And so we brought her home to the gentle barn, and we had the vets look at her. We had two different vets look at her, and they both said the same thing. They all said, she'll never walk again. You should euthanize her. But I don't know. It didn't sound right to me. She had life in her eyes. I was not going to give up on her. And so I said, well, why can't she walk? And I kind of examined the situation. Well, she can't walk because her spine is crooked. Okay, well, what do you do when you have a crooked spine? You get a chiropractor. So I started calling around to different human chiropractors, asking them if they would work on a cow. And as crazy as that sounds, I did get somebody to say yes and said, wow. I'm a human chiropractor, but I've done work on horses and dogs, and I would be open to working on a cow. So he came out and he kept working on her spine every single day. And every single day after his session, you could tell that the spine was a little bit straighter and a little bit straighter. And then after a few weeks, he said, her spine is straight. So she could technically walk right now. She just doesn't know she can walk because she never has. So now you need to help her start building muscles and know that she can walk. So what we did was we got volunteers with her all through the day. And every half hour, we taught those volunteers how to pick her up on her feet and get her to take a few steps before laying back down. And the first day, she just stood there for a couple seconds and laid back down. The second day, she took one step and laid back down. The third day, she took a few steps and laid back down. And every time they did this, every half hour, her muscles developed. She gained the confidence to know that she could walk. And she started taking more and more steps until finally, after several months, she was walking and running and playing, and she is now 8 years old, thriving in our barnyard.
This is such a powerful story. Do any of the veterinarians that you went to for help know what happened?
Yes, they do. And that's one of my favorite things about this work, actually, is kind of being on the cutting edge, supporting these animals outside the box, and then going back to the veterinarians and helping them understand the benefit of acupuncture and chiropractor and nutritional supplements and all the things that we use to try to get them to implement the benefits of those with his other patients. Because veterinary medicine is wonderful, but there's a whole slew of other things that aid in the healing process. And if you can accommodate all of them, you can really heal a lot more animals. I have a very similar story many years ago when I was rescuing a lot of dogs and cats, and we still are, but just before I started the Gentle Barn, I was rescuing hundreds of dogs and cats. There was a cat who was owned by some drug addicts, and they brought her to me in a toolbox, a closed toolbox. There's no air in a toolbox. So, I mean, she was lucky to be alive, but she had brain damage and she couldn't move at all. She was completely paraplegic. Then I brought her to the vet. The vet didn't really know how to fix her or what to do. He did exploratory surgery, which failed. He tried a bunch of different meds and drugs and steroids that failed. And he finally said, you know, I think it's time to euthanize her. And it was just something, I can't explain it. There was just something about the spark in her eye and the loudness of her purr. She would hear me. She would hear me down the street and she would start purring. There was a life force about her and I just couldn't give up on her. And the vet said that I was absolutely insane. And he said, you know, if you're not going to euthanize her, then you need to take her out of here because we don't believe in what you're doing. And I said, that's fine. I just want to try something before completely giving up on her. And I brought her home and I found a superfood algae. Sun chlorella algae superfood is an algae that we use to boost all the animals' immune systems. And I started putting it down her throat just to kind of boost her immune system and give her every opportunity to turn this thing around. And I kid you not, within 3 months, she was running around my house. And I took her back to the veterinarian and told him what I had done. And he did not believe me that it was the same cat. And I swore to him, I was like, of course it's the same cat. And he didn't believe me.
Oh, my goodness. What another powerful story. Well, I said when we opened the show today that we're tuning in love. And these are two beautiful examples about how love heals. And not only do we need to believe in ourselves, but it's so powerful when we have a loving community around us to support us and believe in us. And these two stories are beautiful just on their own about these precious animals. But we all need to take that message in because so many people are sick on one level or another and don't believe that they can heal. And one of the reasons why they don't believe it is because the people that we put so much power in and respect for, the doctors, our medical establishment, don't believe that we can heal. But in many, many cases, we can. And we have to believe in ourselves and a loving community around us to support us. And maybe even connecting with some animals will help you along in your journey. That's the great message that I get from these two stories.
You know, I love that you said that because I believe very deeply in what you're saying. I do believe that we get labeled and diagnosed and then we're treated accordingly. And it doesn't allow a lot of room for healing. We work with a lot of children and adults with special needs, and they come in with staff and therapists that treat them through the lens of their diagnosis and through the lens of their condition. And so they're constantly being told what they cannot do. And it's astounding to us, actually. It's one of the things that's the hardest to deal with. I remember this one girl, we had a group of high schoolers with special needs. And this one girl absolutely was in love with our pigs. And she would go into the pig barn and just lay in the straw with them and sing and hum and pet them. And she just loved being with them. And one day, this young girl was running towards the pig barn to step up into it so she could lay with the pigs like she always did. And as she was about to step up into the barn, the counselors grabbed her. And we said, oh, my God, what, like, can't you let her go? Let her do her thing. And they said, oh, she can't make that step by herself. And we were saying, but she was just about to do that. She was just about to do it. Can't you let her try? And they were like, no, she can't do that. And me and my husband were kind of going, look, please, we're asking you, please, to let go of her and see what she can do on her own before deciding that she can't. And they let go of her. They were very frustrated with us. But they let go of her, and up the steps she went into the barn. She laid down like she always did with the pigs. And they were so focused on what she could not do that they could not back away enough to let her shine. And that's one of the things we did at the Gentle Barn is we kept reinforcing, yes, she can. Let her try. Let her do it. Let's see what she can do. And by the end of the program, she was doing so much more by herself than she ever did before, and it helped the counselors see her in a different light. So sometimes, I mean, look, there are legitimate diagnoses and legitimate conditions that we have, of course, but sometimes it could be the way other people see us, and they limit us in that view. And sometimes it could be the way that we see ourselves. And if we could just believe in ourselves and think beyond our diagnosis and beyond our conditions and vision who we really are and the strength and power and determination in each of us and let it shine, we could keep pushing the envelope and stretching that rubber band and doing more and more and more till we find ourselves more and more healed and empowered.
You're doing amazing work, and you're doing amazing work with non-human animals, and there are so many billions, unfortunately, that we slaughter every year for food and for other purposes that are not necessary, and we exploit them as much as we can for our own, quote, benefit. And it's beautiful that you can save a precious few of them and share this with other people so that people can learn from this and perhaps help make positive change. But I'm thinking we need these types of facilities for humans too, not just for animals. You're bringing children in and teens in, and that's a great thing, but I know a lot of people that certainly could thrive if they were residing at your sanctuary and getting the care that you give the animals.
Well, I don't know about residing, but we certainly are open to the public every Sunday. We do private tours and groups during the week, and there's room here for everyone.
The healing
on the property is so beautiful. There's a healing energy here that's, yes, the animals are heroes and ambassadors, but the actual grounds is so healing and peaceful, and you feel connected to nature and connected to yourself. It's really magic.
That's an interesting point that we'll end on this one. Feeling the energy of a space, feeling the positive energy or the negative energy. Some places just don't feel safe. But then there are some spaces that feel nourishing and loving and positive just by being in it. And I'm asking everyone, have you felt that? Have you recognized places that feel good, where the energy is so positive? And you're saying that your sanctuary has that feeling.
Yes, absolutely. When we look for land, starting another location, the acreage, the size, the amenities, the location, the price, those are all really important factors. But the most important factor is, what does the property feel like? Does it feel like a sanctuary? Does it feel like a healing place? When we were looking for the location in Nashville, Tennessee, we had a property that was bigger, less expensive, better location, bigger house. And I stood on that land with my eyes closed and said, this is not it. This is not it. It did not have good energy. It was not healing. It was dark. And then we ended up with a place that was slightly more expensive and slightly less acreage. But when I stood on that land and closed my eyes and took a deep breath, I know for 100% certain that that was the place, because it felt so healing, like a vortex, so much love, so much joy, so much peace. And that when people step onto our property out of their cars, they feel that immediately before they even get to the animals. And so it's sanctuary, not just for the animals, but for people, for everyone that's on that land, they'll feel a piece of that.
I understand that. Some people might be listening and say, okay, these women are batty. But we know we have five senses, but I think we have more than that. Maybe it's intuition or something, but a sense for energy, perhaps. I don't know what it is because I can't comprehend it, but I know that there's more to our ability to sense things. I purchased property in Costa Rica about 15 years ago. I plan to do something with it, and I have yet to do it because life got in the way. But I do visit, and what happened to me was just that. I wasn't intending to buy as big a piece as I did, but I stood on this land and I'm tearing up just talking about it, but it spoke to me. And it was such a powerful, positive energy. And I love it there. So I know I know what you mean.
Wow,
maybe I should bring a gentle barn over there in Costa Rica. Who knows?
Yeah. Let me know when you want to make it a gentle barn. I'm ready.
Yes. Okay. Well, I always love talking to you, Ellie. Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know other than they should donate to the Gentle Barn at gentlebarn.org?
Yes, that would be really helpful. We can't feed them on our own. We need partners from around the world that will help us fund the hay and the vet care and our programs. So, and then, so gentlebarn.org. And of course, everyone can follow us on social media for more pictures, stories, and motivational episodes from our animals.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food today.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Give a big hug to all of your animals and all of your staff that help you.
I will.
Okay. Take care. That was Ellie Lex of The Gentle Barn, everybody. Visit gentlebarn.org to learn more. And perhaps you can visit them either in Santa Clarita, California, or in Tennessee, or in Missouri. Beautiful. I have to tell you, I sincerely was just choking up there. It really surprised me. And maybe you think I'm batty. You know what? I don't care. but I do have some land in Costa Rica, and I do camp. Well, I used to camp there alone, actually, in this jungle environment. And then, okay, well, my story is I got cancer in 2006. And then when I returned in 2007, I would stay with friends, and I've never camped there since. But I have visited, and I do dream of it and what I can do with it. And right now in my mind, since it's not developed, in my mind, it's a sanctuary of sorts for all of the bugs and bees and animals that get to live there. And I'm happy about that. But there was a tree. There was a guava tree. Now, in Spanish, it's called the guava tree, but it's not the tree that has the guava fruit. That's a guayaba, I think. My Spanish is not good. I'm working on it. But it's a tree that has the ice cream bean, which is a big pod. And inside of the pod are these beans that are covered with a white, fleshy fruit. And you can put those in your mouth and then spit out the big seed. And it sort of tastes like juicy fruit. And there was one tree of this type that would talk to me. Yep. We had some wonderful conversations. And unfortunately, that tree has died, and it was very heartbreaking. And I'm hoping that its children and grandchildren will grow up to be strong trees that will talk to me. Some other time. Whew. I also wanted to mention Costa Rica because the First Lady of Costa Rica is spearheading a plan to eliminate all fossil fuels by 2050. And it's an ambitious project. It doesn't necessarily include everybody going vegan, although that would be really lovely. But it does include getting off of fossil fuels. And one of the motivations behind this idea is to show bigger countries how to do it. So if a little country can do it, perhaps other countries can follow suit. The unfortunate thing is we need to learn how to fly planes without fossil fuel because Costa Rica has a big tourist industry, and to support their economy, we need to fly there. I would love to bicycle there, but I don't think that would be a good idea. Not just because it's far, but because it's a little dangerous, right? All right. Some good news, some really good news. Have you heard that in New York City, our wonderful Brooklyn Borough President, Eric Adams, who we've had on this program and is just an amazing individual, he has now gotten Meatless Mondays approved for schools citywide. Now, I didn't know this, but New York City already has a free lunch program. A free lunch exists in New York City. And this was launched in 2017 to 18 school year, and it provides free, nutritious, healthy breakfasts and lunches to all the participating public schools. But now they're adding Meatless Mondays to the program. And so the schools will serve vegetarian menus on Mondays for breakfast and lunch. And the reason behind it is to improve public health. Eric Adams has his own amazing story where he had diabetes. And all the doctors he went to, he told me five of them were all just basically giving him the same protocol of medication. He looked online and learned about healthy plant-based diets. And now he's this super whole food vegan, amazing, looks fabulous. And he's doing great things for New York City. And he's also going to be running for mayor. And that'll be really exciting. Mayor of the greatest city in the world, in my opinion. That would be great to have a vegan there doing great things for the city. Now, the sad thing is there's always pushback, right? So I remember when Michael Bloomberg was mayor of New York City before Bill de Blasio was. And Bloomberg also wanted to help the health of the community. And he had this idea to tax soda, with the idea that soda isn't healthy. And there are these giant-sized sodas that people just drink in one gulp. In fact, they're called a big gulp. And they're loaded with refined sugar and really wreak havoc on our health for children and adults. And there was so much pushback that the tax never went through. But his heart was in the right place. So it's taken some time. It's taken some years. And now we have this Meatless Monday in the schools, which is great. And then Fox News today has an article that just came out, and it reads like a humor piece in The Onion or some other sarcastic, comical spoof magazine, but it's supposed to be real news. And I'm just blown away. It opens up saying the mayor of the nation's largest city says the only way to save the planet from an environmental calamity is to force school children to eat twigs and berries. And that's from Fox News, and it gets worse. Now, the children, incidentally, are not forced. They can bring their own lunch. They can eat whatever they choose to. This is a service that's provided for free by New York City. And for a lot of children who can't even afford lunches, this brings great relief to them and their families to offer food and to offer healthy food. And I'm not eating twigs. Are you? Why did they say that about us? We're eating twigs. I will drink twig tea. I confess that. I love twig tea called Kukicha. And I'm not particularly interested in eating twigs, although I will eat leaves, just not twigs. Anyway, it's a crazy article. And they call Meatless Mondays a national propaganda campaign that purports to promote healthy and environmental friendly meal options. Goodbye, hot dogs. Hello, bean curd. And instead of delicious cheeseburgers and pepperoni pizza, the children will have to scarf down roasted chickpea tagine and something called kid-friendly kale salad. This is crazy. And it goes on and on, and it's worse. But this is what Fox News is all about. Unfortunately, there have been some wonderful exposés on Fox News in general in the New Yorker recently, talking about how far they have gone to snow the public. And I'm not saying that all media outlets are clean and tell the truth, but this is really unacceptable, what they're promoting here. But I'm sure their followers are eating it up. Anyway, I really believe that people are getting the message about healthy plant-based eating. I like to say you never know how good you can feel until you try it. And the proof is in the chia pudding. Okay, Karen, enough of the puns. So that's Meatless Mondays in New York City. And we'll see what the benefit is. While we're on the subject of food, oh, this show is called Food. It's all about food. So we are on the subject of food. I want to remind you about the upcoming conference, The Real Truth About Weight Loss. It starts on March 16th. It goes until the 24th. It's created by Chef AJ. We talked to her a couple of weeks ago on this program. If you want more information about it, you can go to my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. I've got a bunch of stuff right there on the homepage where you can click and find more about it. Now, many, many people want to lose a few pounds. I know, and there's lots of programs out there. I believe the only program that works is adapting a whole food plant lifestyle where you're not eating refined food, processed food, junk food, or at least very, very rarely, and reducing or eliminating animal products from your diet. And what you are eating are all of the wonderful fruits and vegetables in the plant kingdom. There are a gazillion of them, and many of them are very delicious. So find out more about the real truth and the real truth about weight loss starting on March 16th. And you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com to find out more about it. I find many diet programs or detox programs that are out today, many of them are better than the standard American diet. So the standard American diet is like the bottom because it consists of highly processed food, refined flours, refined sugar, refined oils, and lots of meat, lots of dairy, lots of junky, sugary foods. And it's killing us or making life unpleasant. Now, many people would think, no, it's making my life pleasant. I like eating cookies and cakes and hot dogs and burgers. But then chronic disease is a result, inflammation, joint inflammation, pain, aches, not having any energy, heart disease and diabetes, and et cetera, autoimmune diseases. It's a disaster. So almost anything is going to be better than the standard American diet, right? And a lot of these diet programs and detox programs today are encouraging people to nix the junk food. Stop eating the refined sugar, the refined flours, the processed food, the junk food. And that's great. And people feel better. But they were also, many of them, are recommending things that are not supported by science and are just wrong. And I read about a lot of them, and people ask me questions about them. So I wanted to talk about some of the things that are often brought up in some of these programs and things to look out for should you be lured or interested in participating in one of them. I fully support The Real Truth About Weight Loss, which is coming up on March 16th, and that's why I've said it a bunch of times already, but there are many others out there that I don't support. So let's talk about protein powder. How many people out there use protein powder? Raise your hand. Ah, there are a few of you. I see. Now, there are different kinds of protein powder. There's whey protein powder. And what I say about whey protein powder is no whey. Whey, W-H-E-Y. It is a dairy product. And it's like a byproduct of milk and cheese production. And the manufacturers just had so much whey protein, they didn't know what to do with it. And somebody got clever and said, let's make protein powder out of it, and then started marketing it to sports aficionados like they needed it. And protein powder has become a very popular item. A lot of people buy into it, and a lot of people think they need it. And for those that bought into it and didn't want to have animal products in their protein powder, there are lots of plant alternatives that have come out. Some of them are soy protein based, and more there are some that are based on rice protein or pea protein. And the bottom line is this: most of us don't need protein powder. So even if you're an athlete and you're doing all kinds of work, You don't really need protein powder. What you need is eating more calories of a whole food plant diet. And if you feel like you're needing protein, and let's talk about that for a minute, and then I'll get back to this. But how do you know you need more protein? This always blows my mind when people say, "Oh yeah, I need to eat more protein." How do you know this? Do you have a protein meter somewhere that says what you need today is more protein? And then what you need today on another day will be more fat or more carbohydrate. How do you know? We don't know. Now, there are some tests that can be done to show if you're deficient in protein, but basically, if you're not getting enough calories, that's about the way that you could be deficient in protein. So, how do you know? You don't know. So, if you're feeling a little off, what is it you need? You probably need more water or more sleep. Or maybe a better gut microbiome, a better balance in your digestive system. None of this is related to protein. Or maybe it is because maybe you're getting too much protein. And then if you're somebody who wants big muscles, and I don't know why anybody would want big muscles, but that's your prerogative. I think it's important to be strong, lean, and fit. But to build muscle, I go to those that know best on how to build muscle. Gorillas, elephants, hippopotamus, these vegetarian animals that are eating lots of greens. So the idea is that we eat more calories of healthy food to support muscle growth. So back to protein powder. Protein powder can come in handy. I will admit, in my life, I have mixed protein powder in with my smoothies. And in hindsight, I realized I didn't need it. But when I was going through chemotherapy, it was advised that I might have trouble digesting and eating. And so I could make a smoothie and add the protein powder. And I used Vega protein powder at the time. And it all worked out very nicely. But I wasn't losing weight on chemotherapy. I was lucky. I was being treated at the best place in the world for chemotherapy, the Block Center. And if you want to hear more about that or know more about that, you can email me at info@realmeals.org. I'm happy to share my information there. But with all the nutraceuticals I was taking and the vitamin treatment and my healthy diet, I didn't lose weight on chemo. I wasn't nauseous. So protein powder really isn't necessary. And if you think you need it, okay, fine. But the best ones would be plant-based and based on hemp seeds or pea protein or something like that. Now, the problem is I've just mentioned pea protein, and everybody's getting on the pea protein bandwagon, and everybody's getting into pea processing. Not only is that fun to say, pea processing, but it sounds kind of silly, doesn't it? Pea processing. Pea protein, isolated pea protein, is the new trending product that the big food manufacturers like Arthur Daniels Midland and Cargill have their eyes on. They're both investing lots of money and getting into pea processing. The interesting thing is that we don't know much about isolated pea protein. I haven't seen any research on it. There's tons of research on soy and isolated soy protein. But I think it's going to be interesting to find out things in the future about isolated pea protein. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying we don't know. But what we do know is that anything that's processed is not ideal for human consumption. And isolated pea protein is highly processed. You get that? So if you're thinking for some reason, if your protein meter is saying, I need more protein, and again, I don't know how you would know that, but if you felt like you needed it, eat more beans, eat nuts and seeds, eat lots of green leafy vegetables, chew your food. And you will get plenty of protein. Still, the money is in the manufactured food. The money is in the processed food, where you can have value added so that you can charge more for it. And that's what the big companies are looking at. What products can they now make to satisfy this growing, burgeoning vegan market? People that want to reduce or eliminate animal foods in their diet. There's one company, Tritan, that is creating a human milk protein without the human. And there's another company, Perfect Day, that's making a milk that actually has casein and whey in it without the cow. So they're coming up with manufacturing ways to make certain foods that they think people want using algae and microorganisms without the animal. And as I opened this program, the reason why I got into the work that I do is to eliminate pain and suffering for animals. All this is great. From a health point of view, I'm not so sure. Now, maybe making a human milk protein would be beneficial for mothers who couldn't nurse. And we could have a baby formula that was practically the same as mother's milk. And that would be a good thing. But aside from that, adults don't need to eat human milk, right? And this Perfect Day product that makes casein and whey and makes it without the cow, this is concerning because we've seen research showing that these foods, these components of dairy, are not healthy. So it's a crazy world we live in, isn't it? Yes, I think so. Now, I kind of play all the fields, and whereas I would love all of you to eat a whole food plant diet, because it's best for the animals, and it's best for you, and it's best for the planet. I know I can't get what I want, but I can dream, I can wish, and I never say no. But I'm thinking about my mother, for example, and she has mild dementia, and I buy her groceries for her either online or when I'm in town, I buy them for her and bring them to her. It's difficult for me as a vegan, and I have never done this before in my life, but I buy things that I know she wants to eat, and they're not things that I would prepare or buy, but I do it for her, and that includes meat. I've never bought meat, I think, in my life. I stopped eating meat when I was about 15 years old, but I buy it for her. Now, it bugs me, and I know it's not good for her, especially after learning from Dean and Ayesha Sherazai, the authors of The Alzheimer's Solution, that 90% of Alzheimer's and dementia can be prevented or reversed with a healthy diet. So I'm trying to find ways to get her to eat better. And I think I found an in. I had her try, when I was in California, I had delivered in with her grocery a package of Beyond Burgers and Field Roasts Chow Cheese. Have you tried these products? Field Roasts Chow Cheese. That's C-H-A-O. They're not foods that I typically enjoy, but I know a lot of people like them. And the Chow Cheese we've used a few times, and it's good. It's a sliced cheese, and it melts. And it does a good job for cheese. I'm not really into most commercial cheeses, although a lot of them are getting better now, the ones that are nut-based or coconut-based. But she liked them. And so now we're transitioning. I'm buying less of the animal stuff and more of the plant stuff. And hopefully we can move in that direction. It'll be better for her and better for me. Beautiful. I was in California for over 3 weeks, and now I'm home. I'm home alone because Gary is still in California dealing with his dad's property. His dad died on February 13th. He was 93, and he's got a lot of work to do with respect to that. And that makes things a little more challenging. I kind of fall into some routines when I'm alone that are different than when I'm with him when it comes to eating. But I'm trying to stay on the path and do what's right. I could see very easily falling into some habits of eating standing up or eating at the desk or eating in bed or doing a variety of things that I don't really think are good or healthy. So I make a point of eating at the table, eating with nice plates and napkins and dishes, and treating myself, being good to myself, even though I'm alone. I know a lot of people have difficulty eating well when they are alone and maybe won't even eat enough. And I'm mindful of that because I want to take care of me. I love me. I hope you love you. I love you. Tune in love right now, everybody. So I was thinking about a flatbread, and I don't eat a lot of bread. Certainly, it needs to be gluten-free. And I was coming home the other day very hungry, and while I was on the subway, I was creating this recipe in my head. And I came home and made it. And if you're curious about it, it's right there on the homepage of responsibleeatingandliving.com. It's called the Everything Flatbread. It kind of reminded me of the Everything Bagel and the Everything little crackers that you can get in New York. But please go there. I think we're out of time. I'm hearing our music. So I could talk all day about food, but I'm going to have to wait till next week. Thanks for joining me. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.